Hey, just a heads up that the following content may be disturbing or triggering for some listeners and is not appropriate for children. Please take care of yourself and others who may be listening with you. Welcome to the Bonus Babies Podcast, a show that has no easy answers, only hard questions.
Venus fills a void that I had too, because like I said, in this work, you feel a lot of times unappreciated, that you're doing it for nothing. And sometimes you feel like you're getting your hand spanked for doing the right thing when you know you're doing what you need to do for these kids and these youth. But I think she saw what I really was trying to do.
And that is why nobody can ever say anything bad about you to me, ever.
It really does sound like you two really saved each other. Can you tell me what you call the kids who you've cared for over the years?
We feel that the children that we receive coming into our home are bonuses. So we call them bonus babies.
I love that.
This is your host, Jane Amelia Larson, and I'm a CASA volunteer, a court-appointed special advocate for youth in foster care. Yeah, I know it's a mouthful. In the same way a CASA works, I explore all things in the foster care maze by talking to kids, parents, caregivers, attorneys, social workers, therapists, anybody and everybody who will speak to me to keep the conversation open and the information flowing about all things CASA.
Hi, ladies.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Venus. How are you, girl? You look wonderful.
Mama Lori, hi. I miss you so much.
I miss you more. I miss
you
more.
And hi, Jane, to you too.
Hello. Thank you for joining me.
Hi, Jane. Thanks
for doing this again, ladies. So I have an idea because I just looking at your faces and how jubilant you look, I'm just going to let you guys talk. I don't even need to be in this conversation. You know each other. Start somewhere. Like, how did you meet? And then you can just go.
You know what, Jane? In all fairness, I think we were on the phone for about an hour and a half yesterday.
So you've been prepping on the side. Okay.
Actually, we were just talking. There was just so much to talk about and just everything, you know, and I just want to know everything about what she's doing and everyone in her life. I feel like I know everybody that's in her family already. And, you know, she's my baby. She's my daughter.
When I call her Mama Lori, it's for a reason. I call her often and ask her for advice on even on how to be a mom and how to, you know, deal with certain things in life in general. I told you at one time before that she was so much more than a social worker. She's a confidant. She's the person I can call on, like you should be able to with a mom. You know, I told her actually after the conversation that you and I had before, mm-hmm. that one of the things that I realized and I've always believed in is that, you know, God sends you angels. And I was like, you know, Mama Lori, the cool thing is, or I should say the blessing in that is that God let me keep you. You know, people come into your lives for reasons, seasons, and lifetimes, to use the cliche. And I was like, I got her for a lifetime and I'm blessed.
I'm blessed.
So yes, even though we spoke yesterday, yeah. I was so excited to actually see her face because I haven't seen her face in a minute.
It's been a while. But every time I see you, Venus, every time I see you, it's like seeing you again for the first time, but I know you. It's hard to explain, but it's just so much excitement when I see you. You know, when I first realized that we were working for the same organization and then for some of the same groups within that organization and stuff like that, you know, I was like, wow, she's come full circle, girl. It's like, it's amazing. And I'm so proud of you. But you're my baby. And I've always said that. I mean that forever.
Right. So it's Venus baby and Mama Lori. That's really great. Yes. Okay, All right, so tell me how you met.
Okay, you want to go first? You go.
You may actually have a little bit of a better recollection because the truth of the matter is I was stuck in trauma at the time, but Mama Lori was my social worker. After having many social workers, I was blessed with her, and for the first time, I had a social worker who listened. And I guess that kind of started the relationship. Yeah, she was assigned to me, so to speak, by not only the county, but I think by a higher power.
Oh, isn't that? Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. Venus was assigned to me. And when I met her, it was with she and her sister and her mom. I don't know. Venus even seemed very protective then of her sister, even though her mom was there. She was very much a strong presence, you know, in the home. But Venus, I don't know, for some reason, just seemed a little bit, not stronger, but more mature. But instantly we clicked. She was kind of quiet at first. But
right. And how old was she? How old was Venus?
Weren't you about 15?
Probably.
I think you were 15.
Right. And you were back with your mom at that time?
Yes, she was back with her mom.
I think that was before I was re-removed, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. And your sister was 11 or 12? Was she 12?
If I was 15, she was 10.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, we're about 5.5 years apart. Okay. I'm going to be really honest. And as we're sitting here talking about it, there's no forgetting Mama Lori, but there's so many patches in my life that I don't remember all the details of. I think the truth of it, and this is the first time I've ever thought about that, is that maybe that day, even though I was respectful of her because of just her disposition, you know, to make me feel comfortable, and she listens and she's attentive and she pays attention to what you're saying, but I don't fully remember that day. Because I'd already dealt with so many social workers who didn't pay attention. So that day was probably one where it was like, eh, whatever.
Actually, I remember that. I remember it was a very nonchalant kind of demeanor. You were respectful, though. But it was you could tell it was like, yeah, okay, well, who is she? And is she really going to do what she says she's going to do? I could tell that, but you were never mean. But I could just tell you were a little guarded. And your mom was trying to talk a lot, too. So I was trying to listen to you, but I would ask you questions and she would try to answer for you. So that might have been some of the reason why you weren't really, you know, connecting as much, you know.
That makes sense then. I do remember having different social workers coming around when I was with my mother and her always answering for me or always making me look like I was the one that did everything wrong. Mm-hmm. So those eyes were probably my 15-year-old self saying she's lying and I hope somebody really understands or, I mean, the plethora of things that could go along with it. But I don't remember that day clearly, but I remember things like us walking even through the corridors at Antelope Valley College when I seen you.
Okay.
And you mentor me even then. I remember a lot of our conversations and, more than anything, though, it's not the details of them. It's the way that Lori made me feel.
Ooh, Lord Jesus, I'm gonna cry. Hold on. I know. I brought my tissue. I know, because, oh, God, you're so special. God, she's always been very special. Yes. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Mama Lori gets the name Mama for a reason. And I think it's still so very touching to me because of the fact that a woman gives birth to you and can't love you as much as a complete stranger.
Oh, I loved you. I loved you from the beginning, you know, but you were loving, you were easy to love. You know what I'm saying? I've had a lot of, young people come into my life. I can honestly say the majority of them were just really sweet, beautiful young people, but you were just different. And you listened. You say I listened to you. You listened. That's not always an easy thing for foster children to do, you know, or children in the system to do, because you've heard it from so many different people. You know, you've heard a lot of promises. A lot of times the social worker would probably believe your parent. You know, parents are going to be on their best behavior when they're talking to the social worker, you know, and sometimes they're going to paint their child, even though they love their child, they're going to paint their child in a completely different opposite light simply because they don't want to look bad. And I could feel that. I could feel that because you really couldn't get much in. You really couldn't say a lot. And even when I wanted to take you for outings and things like that, I even wanted to take your sister too, because I felt like she really didn't have a voice at all. Okay. But she wasn't assigned to me. So I worked with you, but I never really viewed it as work. You know, it wasn't a difficult thing to do at all, you know, because you were very easy. You say you weren't, but yes, you were. I just had to break through the barrier, you know, I had to, but I had to earn that. I knew I had to earn that with you because you weren't going to just give it to me. You wanted to know where I was coming from to see if I was deserving of you opening up to me. And I just gave you that time to do that.
I think I was craving that too. I craved it, and you came in and you helped to fill me. And you know, I don't think we ever talked about this either, but in one of the last foster homes I was in, it was finally a good foster home and I didn't want to leave. And, I remember that you had asked the judge for an extension for me to stay in foster care longer. I really thought that that was going to happen. And unfortunately, when I went to court, I had a referee that day. And because I finally started doing what I should have been doing, and that's going to school and doing things the way that, you know, I should have been doing it. And when I say I was bad, I don't remember ever being, mean or bad towards you because I fell in love with you, but I was still doing a lot of stuff on the outside that I should have been doing for a little while. Things that
she kept that secret.
Yeah, we might still keep some of that secret. Okay, but I was finally in a foster home that I felt loved, and that was because of Mama Lori. It wouldn't have happened without her, without any doubt. And I wanted to stay there. I wanted to finally get to be a kid. This particular foster home, we were just discussing this yesterday, was a foster parent who literally I'd sit down and I would be studying and she would come over and rub my back. Do you need anything? Here's some snacks. Here's some food. You mean I get food that I don't have to go and scrounge for? And you like all of those things. And I wanted to stay.
That should be normal. That should be normal, but they weren't.
But because of Mama Lori, I got to experience that for a little while. And, but yeah, unfortunately I ended up going to court and there was a referee there and he said, you know, it looks like you're doing really well now. Your attendance is up. You've graduated from high school. And I'm like, yeah, but I want to stay longer so I can, you know, still be supported until I leave for the military. And he was like, no, you're good. And he emancipated me, ended up emancipating me a little early.
Right. So what does that mean? A referee? What is that? I don't, does that exist now still?
I think it still does. It's like the substitute, right? The stand-in judge. He's not the, he was not the one that you had before.
Right. And I don't think that they're actual certified judges. I think they're in between. I just know that they were called referees, but I don't, I'm not really familiar with it now. It's not anything that I have to work with in my job today.
Right. So what happened then after you were not able to remain in the home?
Well, I still remained in the home for a little while. They just stopped all foster care payments. They emancipated me. And my foster mom was actually a biological cousin, biological maternal cousin, who we've always been really, really close. Unfortunately, she was who she was, loving, nurturing, there, stable, but was not educated. And therefore, she was didn't really have very good employment. She was working at Burger King. And I honestly was the only one who was driving because she didn't know how to drive at the time. I taught her how to drive. And we were living in a 3-bedroom apartment, which is a whole nother story in itself. I don't even think I told you that story, Mama Lori, of how we got the 3-bedroom apartment.
No.
As an adult now, I look back at it and I'm like, that was completely wrong. But I was working at a recreation center and my supervisor was a grown married man. He wasn't the most appropriate. But somehow, and why, I don't know, in the midst of the conversations and the stories that we had, he actually rented the apartment for us. Because Tina's credit was very, very bad. And I was still under the age of 18. Once I hit 18, he was like, I got to get you off my credit before my, my wife finds out. So we, ended up, because we were already living there, we ended up putting everything under my name and it actually helped to establish my rental credit. And, then once I was emancipated and we had to leave because we no longer had the money because they cut off the foster care payments and the foster care payments was basically paying for the rent for a 3-bedroom apartment. Then, when the foster care payments stopped, we could barely afford a 1-bedroom. So it was my cousin and her child and myself. And then we went into a 1-bedroom apartment. There was unfortunately a bit of a disagreement at one point. And, you know, I was still kind of being a butthead and wanted to do what I wanted to do. And I felt that because I was you know, the one who was driving, and now I was helping to pay the bills, that I could kind of do whatever I wanted. And I disrespected her at one point.
Okay.
And she basically was like, you disrespect me. Mm-hmm. You have a choice. Mm-hmm. You can be here and respect me, or you can leave.
Okay.
And for a little while, I was like, well, then fine, I'll do it and I'll leave. And, you know, being a teenager and thought I knew everything and still a little angry. And so I left and was couch surfing for a little while and slept in my car and slept at people's houses who I shouldn't have been sleeping at their houses, and realized very quickly. I even slept in the Walmart dressing room one night because it was too cold to sleep in my car. Palmdale's very cold.
Yeah.
And it humbled me even more and very quickly. And so I apologized and I went back and I enlisted in the military and was gone a couple of weeks later, January of 2006, excuse me, 1996.
1996.
Yes.
I know, so much time, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So when did you guys then you lost touch for a while? Was it around then when you went into the military?
Mm-hmm.
And then you found each other again. Tell me about that.
I think it was that we refound each other at Antelope Valley College.
Mm-hmm. Antelope Valley College. We ran into each other. We kept bumping into each other in public places like Barnes and Noble and places like that. And it was like no time had passed. We hugged. We cried. We would always cry. And then there would be just be so much to catch up on that she had done. She was always making these huge milestones in her life. There was just so much. And she would tell me so many things. And then I would hear it from somebody else after the fact. And I'd be like, oh my God, she really was, you know. But it never surprised me, because anything that Venus attempted to do, she was successful at it, you know. And I was never surprised. I was just surprised that I didn't know about it. But every time we would bump into each other in public places and public arenas. And then this one particular time when I think we both decided together that we're never going to lose touch with each other again was in probation. And we were at this function, this event called Success is Our Future. I had to work that event with my unit. I had to work that event with the placement unit that I was working with. And I see this person come running towards me and she's saying, hi, mama. And I was like, I was looking because, you know, my eyes have, my eyes are bad, okay? I couldn't see. I didn't have any glasses on. And she stopped dead in her tracks and she said, oh my God, you don't even remember me. You don't even remember me. And I said, oh my God, it's you. It's you. And I couldn't see. I really couldn't see. So then we hugged and we cried and I'm like, what are you doing here? And she told me that she was there for the same event with some of the kids on her caseload. And I was like, oh my God, such a small world, such a big world, but such a small world. And here we were working in the same organization with some of the same kids in transitional age youth. And I was doing the quality assurance aspect of it, where I would go out and monitor the group homes and then interview the kids to see that they were receiving all of the things that group homes were mandated to provide. But I had no idea that Venus was also working with some of those same kids. And so she was there honoring some of the kids that had graduated with honors and different things like that. So it was really moving, you know, because not only was she working with these youth, but it was like, my God, you know, you've come full circle because you used to be one. And I was just very proud to know her. I felt honored to have been her social worker. The relationship has definitely changed. She's like my daughter. I love talking to her. I love sharing her life now. It's an extension. And she keeps saying that God sent me to her, but he also sent her to me. You know, sometimes you feel like what you do in this field is just feel like you're spinning your wheels and you feel like you're not really helping. I've had kids that ran away, not because of what I didn't do, but because they felt like the system was still fighting them, you know, and I could only do so much because, you know, there's management above. And they would say things that I would not agree with, that would go against my recommendations. So these kids would just say, well, Miss Lori, I'm running away. I'm leaving. You know, I'm at the age now I can take care of myself. That they had grown enough. They had finished the things that they needed to accomplish. And I didn't worry a whole lot about them, but I do think about them. With Venus, she never gave me the feeling that she wasn't going to survive. She worked like 2 and 3 jobs. You know, she was always doing things. She was always studying and going to school. And now she might not have at home, but a couple of times I can remember her saying while I was there talking to her mom, no, that's not true. She wasn't disrespectful, though. Her mom would get mad. You see that look on her face. But I think Venus did get some of her strength, though, if I may say. I'm standing up and I'm speaking out, and you might not like it, but I'm never going to lie. You might not like me telling the truth, but I'm not going to lie about it. And I liked that about her. She spoke her truth. And a lot of youth, they don't. They either go overboard and it's like, no, you don't tell me what to do. Nobody's going to tell me what to do. And I'm going to do what I want to do, da, 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 to their own detriment. Or they don't speak out at all, which is also to their detriment, because I can't help you if you're not telling me the truth. And I need to know what's really going on so I can be of assistance.
Right. But what happens so often with kids is that they don't know who to trust, right?
I hope that she always felt safe. You know, I tried to make Venus feel safe to talk to me, you know. I let her know, though, that if there was something that I felt was detrimental, though, to her well-being, then I was going to have to say something about it, but never to harm her, never to put her in harm's way, and never to set her back, but to make sure that she continued to progress, because she was progressing really basically on her own in spite of all of the challenges and setbacks that she had. And she might have done some things, of course, without my knowledge, you know, after we lost touch. She would always tell me that she was okay. One time she did tell me, though, when something wasn't right with a male individual, and I was trying to guide her through that, but she was on her own. She was on her own. So I know that she probably didn't tell me some things because she probably didn't want to disappoint me. But I told her, there's nothing you could have ever done for me to be disappointed. You might have done some things for me to worry, but I would never, you know, be disappointed where I would just throw my hands up and shut you out ever.
Right. Is that true, Venus? Were there things that you couldn't share because you didn't want to disappoint Lori?
I don't even think it was about disappointment. I didn't want to lose her.
Oh, honey, you'd never lose me. Never.
But Lori.
Never.
You got to realize, too, that I felt like everyone in my life that I had loved in one way, shape, or form would leave or hurt me. And so some of the things that I was doing, I didn't want you to know. I didn't want you to know that side. I didn't want you to look at me and not love me. And I know that that's not the reality of the way that things are now, but in the mind.
That's how you felt then. Yeah, that's how you felt. I can understand that. I can understand that. You would probably think that because you've had that in your life, you know. And I'm so sorry. And I'm so sorry that you felt that you might lose me if you were to tell me something. But see, honey, you forgot I had kids, okay?
But so did the other social workers.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I see it now still within the departments that deal with children. For some, this is a life calling. For others, it's a job that they do really well. Mm-hmm. And because they love kids, mm-hmm. Their heart is in it. And then there are those who do it as a paycheck. You didn't make me feel like a paycheck. So many others did. I even had a social worker, and you know who this person is.
Yeah. Yes.
She was aftercare, ILP. And one of my transitional housing units was right behind the Department of Children mm-hmm. and Family Services mm-hmm. where she was housed. Mm-hmm. I was pulling out, and so was she, and she hit me. We were in a car accident. She wasn't wearing her glasses. And initially she got out and she's like, I'm so sorry. And she's kind of frantic all over mm-hmm. the place. And I get mm-hmm. out and then she sees it's me. And then literally this quick, she was like, what were you doing? You were wrong. You were in the wrong. Da, da, da. I hope you have insurance. Oh my God. I can't believe Venus. Da, 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 da. It wow. changed this quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that person. I remember that person.
Yeah, and I remember the story. Didn't you tell me mm-hmm. you were all in a unit meeting one time and somebody had seen my Glamour magazine article
and was speaking highly of me, and she tried to take responsibility for me. Oh, that's my yeah. client.
Right. She tried to take credit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that person was a lot about that. It's like, me, 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 look what I did, look what I do, da, 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 da. This is what I do, and all my kids are a success because of me, and I. And if you're good and believe in what you do, you don't have to sing your accolades. You don't have to do that, because the people that you help, they see it, they know it, they feel it, they experience it, and they, you don't even want them to, but they will sing it for you.
And that is why nobody can ever say anything bad about you to me.
Oh.
Ever.
Oh.
Ever.
Ditto.
I'm very protective of Mama Lori.
As am I. As am I. And you know, even with some of the people that you work with, girl, I'm like, I'm going to have to watch that person, because they're not going to treat you like that. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
They did what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it wasn't right.
Mama Lori is mama.
You're going to make me cry, girl.
We've already been crying all over this. We cry all the time.
I know. We cry. We cry all the time. And we cry happy tears.
Mm-hmm.
Venus fills a void that I had too, you know, because like I said, in this work, you feel a lot of times unappreciated, that you're doing it for nothing a lot of times, you know. And sometimes you feel like you're getting your hand spanked for doing the right thing when you know you're doing what you need to do for these kids and these youth. You have others that are like, well, why do you spend so much time? What are you doing? And why are you doing that? And da-da-da-da-da, you know.
And that's not appropriate.
Right, you know. And I'd be like, well, in policy and procedure and the mission statement and this and that, it says it's all fine. So what's the problem? What's the issue? You know, if I'm being inappropriate or crossing boundaries, then that's one thing. But if I'm not and they're benefiting from it, then what's the issue? A lot of times that would happen, and even with that person that ran into you
and had
the accident, you know, that person, I experienced some of the same issues and trauma, you know, because I think they thought that I was doing too much in Tay. And for God's sake, do not step on their toes. You know, if anyone said anything good about the work that you did, oh my God, then you're stepping on their toes. And believe me, there's so much of this pie. There's enough slices in this pie to go around. There's enough work to do. All we need to do is make sure that we're doing our slice well.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing what we know we're supposed to do. And I think there were some good ones, but I've seen a lot that, you know, I would be looking at them coming out of the courtroom, and their eyes would get big when they'd see me sitting there, you know, in the hallway, because a client would come behind them yelling at them, cursing at them, saying, you lied on me, you lied, you never came to see me, da da da. And I would look at that person, that worker, like, I know they're telling the truth. And I would just be like, oh my God, you have power in your words. You have power to help this family, to reunify this family and give them what they need. And yet you're lying because you didn't do what you were supposed to do. You're trying to make a quota, you know, make numbers, but you lied. So you wrote something that didn't happen because you never even saw them. That kills me. It's not right. It happens far too often. And I can honestly say that that person was like that because they were trying to climb in the organization. So they were padding numbers and things like that. And that's detrimental to families. You're a traitor to your position.
And it still happens.
Yeah, it still happens.
Right. So when you were a kid, Venus, when you were working with Lori, did you get a sense of all the different things that she had to do or was trying to do or couldn't do? Or did you have any sense of that?
Lori, do you mind if I discuss what we discussed last night?
Oh, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all.
So Mama Lori was speaking about policies and procedures. I think when you're human, sometimes, and when I say human and not just political, not just adhering to policies and procedures, and I understand that they're in place for a reason, but whether you were trained in college or whether it's just your own common sense, there are times when policies and procedures are actually detrimental to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mama Lori knew that and allowed me to communicate with her what I really needed. And the truth of the matter is that every other social worker didn't listen. The woman that I was eventually placed with, the one who patted me on my back and loved on me, was a maternal cousin. And as I had told you, unfortunately, she was not really in the place to take on a child financially or anything. But she had moved out here to try to get custody of me, but yet did not have a home yet. And the home that I was in, the husband was extremely inappropriate. They didn't take us to school. They didn't feed us. Like, they would come home with takeout and tell us to figure it out. And there'd be little to nothing in the refrigerator or whatever. And I expressed all of this to Lori, and I told her where I wanted to be. I told her who loved me, who I felt loved with, who I felt safe with. And that was Tina, as well as my foster parent's friend, who ended up becoming more my mentor and not my foster parent's friend, because she's seen all of the things that was going on. And that actually ended their friendship because she's seen the reality of what was happening. But the truth of the matter is, the foster parent's friend is the only one who had a home that could actually take me. Although I'm supposed to be placed with a family member, the friend was not family. So this friend allowed my cousin to move in with her and said, "You get Venus and get on your feet." And I was honest with Lori, and she still placed me there, was not the way policy and procedure would have wanted it to the T, but that is where I thrived. And she paid attention. And the truth of the matter is that she bent rules, but those rules saved my life. And I know she always says, "Don't give me that credit," and so forth and so on. And I'm at a place in my life where I can say, I know that I put in the work, but if I was in still that other place, no amount of work would have got me to where I needed to be because of the abuse and neglect and all the other things that were happening in that home. So I don't take it lightly when I give her credit. And I say it, and I say it over and over and over again. And I tell her, stop being humble. I'm not going to say it if I didn't mean it, if it wasn't the reality. And it was. I went from being in a placement and multiple placements before that were abusive or neglectful or whatever the situation was. So I went from a place where literally there was every abuse you can think of, with the exception of, I will say this, it was never physical. I was never actually hit. Neither was my sister, but everything else was there. And she put me in a home. We didn't have everything, but I had everything because I was finally safe. Mm-hmm. She gets me, and I don't understand how she gets me as much as she does. but she does, which is another reason why I'm like, no, God sent her to me, because maybe I'm still a little crazy. I still got some issues.
Stop
it. Which we laugh about her, you know, but even that type of bantering back and forth, I don't know. I never had that. So to have that in her is a blessing. I remember years when things like Thanksgiving, Christmas, I hated them. To be honest, I still don't like them just because of my past, but where I was like, I don't have any family to go to, you know, before I was married, and I didn't have a fam, you know. And then when I found Mama Lori again, I know that I will never spend a Thanksgiving alone if I don't want to, you know, that me and my son would be welcomed in her home.
Absolutely.
And I wouldn't feel like an outsider.
Mm-hmm. Never.
How does that make you feel, Lori?
I have a lump in my throat right now because I'm listening to her. I feel so special to know that she thinks I'm special. Honey, you are more than welcome any day. Open invitation. You don't even have to call. I've told her you don't even have to call me. I'm going to put you to work like everybody else. Get in there and fix your own plate.
But see, that's what's crazy. That's what I want.
Eat as much as you want.
That's what I want. You know, growing up even sometimes, and when you're in foster homes and, you know, all that stuff, you're kind of, people start to serve themselves at Thanksgiving, right? And you're standing in the back waiting for your plate because it's not your turn yet, so to speak. Or like, why are you at the front of the line? Or, oh, and who are you?
Right.
Oh, you're the new foster kid.
Yeah.
You know, awful. It was never just, baby, come on. Even in the homes of my biological family, when I was in foster care with them, I know and I have no qualms that I really could show up at Mama Lori's house and be like, I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. Happy Thanksgiving to us. And she'd be like, come on, baby, get yourself a plate, blah, blah, blah. The way that it should be.
And take some food home. There's plenty of food taken home too.
That's right.
You know, just
all of those things. The way that it should be, I guess. I know that there's no such thing as normal nowadays, but the things that you dream about when you're in foster care, the things that you wish you had, when you do go to a friend's house and their family laughs and reminisces and all of those other things, you know,
right.
Mine weren't like that. There was actually one Christmas. It was 3 days before Christmas, and my mother and my father were not together and had been fighting back and forth. As a matter of fact, I think it was maybe 2 days prior to that, my father came over and got into a fight with my mom and literally was stomping her in her Jesus. Face outside, and I broke them up. And then the 3 days before, he comes back. And I was actually in my aunt's room and I was cleaning my gun. My uncle had given me a gun because my father, was causing a lot of havoc. And my uncle actually even put it on to me. My uncle and my mother's new boyfriend said that they were going to take care of my father. And because my uncle was head of the BGF, which is a Black Gorilla family. Mm-hmm. And this was also when my mother was having me help her to run drugs in and out of the prisons. And I was like, I don't want him dead, but I just want him to leave us alone. So anyway, he comes to the house. I'm the one who opens the door. My mom was scared. And he was like, let me in. And I was like, no. I was that teenager, and he was the old school father that was like, I'm the one who made you and I will take you out. And he tried. He pushed his way into the house, and he wasn't the first time, but he started to beat me like I was a grown man. And I remember my mom saying, I'm not going to say his name, but call so-and-so. And I was literally on the floor, my father standing over me, and the door swung open and my dad stands up and there's a man in the door with a gun pointed at my father. And he opens his jacket, like he puts his hand like towards his jacket and he turns towards the guy and he goes, what, you gonna fucking shoot me in my own house? And the guy just started shooting and shot my father right there in front of us.
Wow.
In front of me and my sister. And at that time too, Crystal, she has asthma. I heard her go, and then she just wasn't breathing. Mm-hmm. She was just like not breathing. And so my thing was first my sister. And I ran to my aunt's room first though, to try and get my own gun. And Crystal wasn't breathing. And I was like, I got to get her inhaler. I got to do something. And I even tried to run into my room. It was a night that it's beyond. Jane, it will be in the book, I'm sure.
Right. So that's your Christmas, right? That's your 3 days before Christmas.
Yeah. He was shot. My mother ended up leaving us the next day to go and visit her boyfriend with his blood still on the floor.
Oh.
The lights were turned off that next day because she didn't pay them. My other foster brother was there. And this foster brother was somebody that I had known from junior high who was already in a group home, but used to come to my house. I mean, my mom would let anybody come through basically. And my foster brother was a bit wild like us. And so anything that my mom taught him, he took on, you know, she would even get the dope sometimes. And then he would help to sell it. He'd help us to bag it up. And when I say bag it up also, my mom would have us pack little tiny colored balloons. And when we would go into the prison, by the way, I had to hide it. I mean, I was a teenager and she was making me stick it inside of a condom and hide it in my vagina. And we'd go into the prisons and we'd buy M&Ms. And I'd go into the bathroom and we'd empty out all the M&Ms and then put the little colored balloons in it. And then when I'd come back out, her boyfriend would eat them like they're M&Ms. And then a few days later, dig them out of his feces, sell it, and then send us money and keep some of it for himself.
Wow.
But yes, then my mother left. And when I think about it, it almost even takes me even to another place. But those were the types of holidays that we had. So holidays for me are still very hard. And I remember that I would have to force myself to get a Christmas tree for my son. And honestly, now I'm grateful that he doesn't really care for one. He's just like, Mom, doesn't matter. And I'm so grateful, but I still feel guilty. And I almost feel like I should, you know, like I need to give him all of the Christmases that I never had. So with all of that being said, it's just nice to know that even though I don't have a biological family, I have Mama Lori and I have my husband. So on both sides now, I have family. Whether I utilize it all the time, I don't always, because, you know, those are still some of my own issues, but I know that I'm growing every day with every conversation that I have with Mama Lori. It helps me not only to be able to say it, and even though I feel it, but to know it even deeper. Like, I honestly now feel I could be stuck in Spain and call her and be like, I don't know what to do. And she'd find a way.
Oh, we're going to get you home, girl.
See?
We're going to get you here. We're going to get you back here. You and I are never losing touch again. Never.
No.
And, you know, I'm not that 30-something pepper stepper. I'm considerably older, but life isn't over for us. Mm-mm. You have a wonderful family now, your husband. I tell her, I said, yeah, you're lucky to have him, but he is also very lucky to have you. And I mean that. He is very lucky, very blessed to have you in his life. Because I honestly believe from the conversations that we have had that you are his real first bout and understanding of what love really is. Venus is amazing. She sings my praises, but I think that she fulfills something in me as well. I laugh really hard. You know, she's talking about stuff that's serious sometimes, and I'm just rolling laughing because she's very colorful and she's so sincere. But I'm just laughing at her because it's not as bad as she thinks it is at that time. So I get her to laugh, and then we say, okay, so what are we going to do? What are we going to do about this? Okay, let's figure this out. She'll say, okay, I'll try it that way. She's very wise. She says that she didn't think she'd be a good mother. She's a ding dong dang good mother. She was mothering her little sister. She was mothering her mother. She's a natural born mother, but she just jumped into action and she did what needed to be done. Now, I think as a mother, she's doing it because she wants to. The love is actually coming out. It's not a have to thing. It's a I want to and I enjoy being a mother. And she has a lot to give. I want her to still open up.
I'm trying.
You know, still open up, you know, because she's accepting of love. But sometimes I feel like she's still a little guarded because of the things that she's been through.
I am.
When I hug her, I can't hold her enough. I feel like I'm going to break her.
You know, hearing Lori even speak about me just solidifies everything even more for me because she knows me. But what I will say, Lori knows me so well. I remember that I'm still a runner. And when things go wrong before people hurt me, I run. I want to go. And the truth of the matter, I think I've told you before how my husband was sent to me as a blessing. But it's still that fine line. And I remember one time I was so mad. And I called her and I was like, I can't do this. But she listened and she said, she basically even referenced, no, this is what you're doing and you're trying to run and that's not who you are anymore. And, you know, like she will give it to me straight. Sometimes it's actually 99% of the time, it's still very, very sweet, but matter of fact. And then when I need to be told about myself, she'll tell me about myself too. And those are things that solidify the love. Because I'm a true believer that those who love you will take the time to tell you the truth rather than just what's easy for them or to give you what it is that you want to hear. And she doesn't do that. And I appreciate that.
You know, it's really inspiring listening to both of you because I'm sure this is true for people hearing this now during COVID and for you both maybe. But it's rougher. It's rough now. We all have severe COVID fatigue and sometimes we're not as nice to the people that we care about that we wish that we were. Mm-hmm. And it's just really, I know that's true for me. And to watch you two and to listen to the two of you love on each other like the way you're doing is just really, it's really nice.
I can't get enough of her. We don't get to see each other as much as we would like to. But when we do, it's like no time has passed. I remember coming to her house one time and it was just the cutest house. And you just saw her personality all in it, her creativity, her feminine side. But, you know, she has this dynamic go-getter side. Think of your favorite sassiest actress, singer, you know, Kamala Harris, you know, she's all these things, dancer. And I'm so impressed, but I didn't want to tell her all the time because not that she would never get a big head. That's not her because she's so modest. She's so humble about herself, you know, but I'm like, I want some of that.
Wasn't that the night I introduced you to pole? I took you to a pole show, didn't I?
Yes.
Yes, I did.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. And I was like, wow. I was amazed. I was, you know, I came out feeling like a whole different person, and which had nothing to do with me. But just watching all of this female energy and I got this kind of attitude, I was like, dang. And everybody loved her. She just knew everybody, and everybody just came up to her and they were just loving on her. And because she was loving, they became loving. And I was like, dang, you know, this was unique. It was different. And I could see that people really loved her. All of that self-confidence that she exhibited as a teenager was like, dang, to the 10th power as a woman, you know. I'm just really proud of her. And I'm very fortunate to have been her social worker. She is a success story to infinity and beyond.
It really does sound like you two. In some ways, you really saved each other.
Absolutely. I know she saved me too. She saved me, you know, because the job was not always kind. What I was trying to do didn't always pan out, but I think she saw what I really was trying to do, what I wanted to do, what I felt was a part of me to do, even as a young person, you know, from some of my own experiences as well. I'm a survivor. And because I have survived, I want to help everybody survive. Come on, come on, let's do this. We can do this kind of a thing. Yeah, I think she saved me too. And on days when I'm feeling like there is no rainbow, I'll hear from her. And she's my rainbow. And she makes me cry every single time before I get off the phone. But she reminds me a lot of times of who I am as well. I don't give myself credit. She does.
You deserve it.
I appreciate you for that.
I am clapping for both of you.
I love you.
I love you more, and you know that.
If you see something, say something. If you suspect that a child's health or safety is jeopardized in any way by parents or anyone else, contact the Child Protective Services Agency in your county. 24-hour hotlines are staffed by trained social workers who will help you through the process, and you can do so anonymously. In California, you can call the Child Protection Hotline at 800-540-4000. And right now in COVID, reports of abuse and neglect are down by 50%. And that's not because it's not happening. It's because kids are not in school, and their teachers and other adults, mandated reporters, aren't seeing them. So if you see something, say something. You might be saving a child's life. And if you're an older kid in trouble, check out PennyLane.org. They offer a safe place for homeless and LGBTQ youth who need some help. And if you're a kid in care who wants a CASA, you can ask for one. In Los Angeles, go to CASALA.org. And anywhere else in the nation, go to NationalCASAGal.org. And you can get one. I want to thank the supremely talented Christina Apostolopoulos for her beautiful music, Eferisto. To hear more of her music, go to Spotify and Instagram at Christina Aposto. That's CHRISTINAAPOSTO. I know you want to. Her stuff is really great. And thanks to my audio producer extraordinaire, Marcos Campito. I'm glad I found you. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please rate us and hit subscribe.